The On The Mark podcast is brought to you in part by these fine sponsors. Bridgestone Golf. Dare to be better. Dare to Bridgestone. And Synovus. Here should be the most important place to your bank, because here is where you are. Synovus, the bank of here.
Welcome to On The Mark, a PGA Tour podcast. Here's your host, someone who walks inside the ropes but thinks outside the box, Mark Immelman.
Thank you for inviting us into your home, your office, your car, your gym, wherever you might be listening to this On The Mark podcast. How's it? I am Mark Immelman. Hoping you are well, hoping your golf scores are going down. And if they are, I want to hear from you, please. Reach out to us at On The Mark Radio is the handle. Best way to reach us there, give us a follow and let us know anything. Just rap with us if you want. That's why we are here. That's the best way to reach out to us. If you want to see some pictures, I have an Instagram account. The handle there is mark_Immelman. And if you just want to email us for one or other reason, the email address is radioonthemark@gmail.com. Again, hope things are going well. We've had some really cool podcasts of late that have been designed to help you to understanding. Not that every podcast we've released hasn't had that emphasis and that purpose. That's why we exist. We want to help you to better understanding so that you can apply information that is appropriate to you, because our goal is to help you to lower scores. So there have been some great podcasts of late, very insightful. In fact, the one with PGA Tour winner and now renowned golf instructor Grant Waite has been very popular. And if you haven't heard it, go to pgatour.com/podcasts or pgatour.com/onthemark or iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, Amazon Alexa, the PGA Tour app. We are at your disposal and we are here to help you. If you're just new to us, welcome to our tribe. It's a global tribe and it's a place where you can pass information around. Let us know if you have someone that you feel like should be on the podcast to help out our global tribe. We would love to hear from you. Again, the handle where you can get to us is Twitter at On The Mark Radio. Of late, you may have heard our podcast with young Robbie Fales, a very smart young golf instructor based in the South Carolina area, and he did a segment on mastermind skills, which I thought was very appropriate because it fit right in with what we aim to do, and that's to empower you to make smart decisions. And these mastermind skills sort of helped you to target your area, so you weren't just sort of throwing stuff up against a wall and shooting in the dark when it came to figuring out what might have been going wrong with your golf swing. So the mastermind skills, he shared some of them with us, he helped you to understand, and it was really neat. He then, to his credit, gave all of the props to Jason Sutton, who was basically one of his mentors, and Jason was the originator of the mastermind skills approach to golf instruction. And so we reached out to him and he said he'd love to join us. He's based in Charlotte, North Carolina, been around the block a few times and has worked with a number of great players. So I said to him, look, Jason, we've got to make sure that this isn't redundant, even though it's your stuff. And he said, no worries. I want to talk about hand path. He goes, it's something that I feel like is so misunderstood and it's so important to golfers of all manner of skill. And I was like, bring it, let's do it. So Jason and I connected last week, and it was a very interesting, very helpful conversation, and I know you are going to have lots of fun as you enjoy this one. This segment of the On The Mark podcast is brought to you by Synovus. Synovus, the bank of here. Jason, it's been a long time coming, but we've got you on the Mark podcast. Welcome, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Well, we've got to have the author of the mastermind skill set. We've had Robbie Fales on before, but now we've got the originator. So we're going to get it straight from the horse's mouth. But for our listeners around the world, let's get to know Jason Sutton first. Tell us a little bit about you, please.
All right. So, you know, long story short, I grew up in a small town in West Virginia. So I'm just an old redneck from West by God. And grew up, you know, a lot of people don't know that, right? Because I'm in a big city now, but that's where it all began. Playing sports, you know, I played a lot of baseball, basketball, football, and sort of just stumbled into golf, really, because junior golf wasn't huge in my area.
I can imagine.
So I did, and my parents didn't play, so I didn't. It was kind of interesting because people usually ask me who got me into the game. It was really a friend of mine that was the only kid on our baseball team that played golf. So
okay.
I started playing at like 12, which is obviously old now compared to some of the young guys that get out there, you know, 3, 4, or 5 years old. So I was starting a little bit late, but being a pretty good athlete, I picked it up fairly quickly, got good really fast.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was breaking 80 and within like a year and a half, just trying to figure things out and just hit it around. So played high school golf, had a decent high school career. Got a couple of low D1 offers to go a little bit more away from home, but decided to go to a smaller school closer to my hometown, which I thought was a great move because I knew I could go in and play right away and, you know, got to get better and experience the team atmosphere.
So let's give the smaller school a shout out. Where did you go?
Yeah, Glenville State College.
All right. So,
it's a couple hours just south of Morgantown, NAIA Division School. We were really good. We had some really good players, and I had a great time. And, you know, sort of set me up into thinking about, you know, what I wanted to do as far as a career. And every summer when I'd go back home, I always worked at the golf course. So, you know, started out just, you know, picking range balls and, you know, working in the golf shop there at a club in West Virginia, Berry Hills Country Club.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of had an idea that I wanted to get into the golf business, whether it was going to be playing or becoming a golf professional. So when I graduated, I was fortunate enough to get on as an assistant pro and just kind of go that typical route of, you know, the PGA going as an assistant and then getting my Class A and working my way up. So I worked at a couple clubs there in West Virginia, you know, just working in the shop, playing, and doing a little bit of teaching, not a whole lot, because I really didn't know what the heck I was doing. Didn't have much training back then, right?
And I guess we've all
a golf lesson.
Yeah, we've all been there.
You know, yeah, exactly. So, you know, they just roll a few balls out and say, you know, go help this guy hit it better. So, you know, that was sort of what sort of sparked my interest into, you know, if I'm gonna do this, it's gonna be a part of my job. I better learn a little bit more about how to help people. So, started reading a lot of books and. You know, back in those days, that was all we had. Was,
yeah.
You know, just the internet was just coming out and getting popular. So I was just reading and talking to as many people as I could. And basically said, well, I've got to get out of West Virginia and get a little bit more opportunity to, if I'm going to be a head professional, I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do at that time. So I wanted to get into the Carolina section because we've got the largest section of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And got my first head pro job at the Northstone Club, which is just north of the city here in Charlotte. So I got my taste of being a head professional at a, you know, pretty nice private club for a couple of years. And then it was great because I learned a lot. I made a lot of mistakes, but also figured out what I didn't want to do for the rest of my career, which was run golf tournaments and fold shirts. So it was,
yeah, the fork in the road.
Uh-huh. Exactly, yeah. So that was sort of my defining moment was, you know, every year I'd sit down and do my goals, and they always tended to line up with being a top teacher and getting better in that part of the business. So I was like, I got to make a decision because I wasn't happy. I wasn't being very productive. And so I'm like, where can I go where I can start to learn how to be a better teacher and really start to, you know, follow my passion. So I went into 2000, I guess it was. I found Dana Rader, which was right up the road.
Absolutely.
At her golf school. So she was very kind to give a passionate, curious fellow from West Virginia a chance to get into a really top 25 golf school. So that's really where my career took off because she really allowed me to be creative and give a ton of golf lessons and, you know, start to dive into the craft that I am, you know, doing today. So I worked there for 11 half years or so and was just really, you know, excited to sort of make the next step. And then once again, opportunity, you know, as your skills get better and your reputation gets a little bit better, you know, things start opening up. So Carmel Country Club, which is a high end private club here in Charlotte, had an opening for a director of instruction. And I was fortunate enough to get that job 6 years ago. And so that allowed me to really kind of take a look at all the things that I've learned for the first 12 to 15 years of teaching and decide, you know, what kind of framework, what kind of philosophy do I really want to, you know, pass on to my staff, but also start to dive into my, you know, my lesson programs here at Carmel. And that's where I developed the mastermind skills.
Yeah, it's a really cool way of going about stuff. And Robbie did a nice job of sort of just briefly outlining the entire thing. And I thought it was genius. And I'm not just saying this because I have you on the line, but I love the structure, if you will. And it gives the receiver of the information, it empowers them to be able to properly identify issues and not just toss what I call Advil for the golf swing at stuff, you know, where it's like, well, keep your head down and do whatever, whatever. I love the emphasis. I'm very much a club face first guy. And so that was talked about. And when I reached out to you, you said, well, how about we talk about skill number four, which is club path and sweet spot control. And that was like choirs of angels erupted inside my head. So let's just start there. First off, for the folks who may not have heard of the mastermind skills, quickly gloss over them. Just go 1 through 5 or 1 through 6, I think it is. Just sort of label them, and then let's dive into number four, please.
Yeah. So again, it's just figuring out, it's nothing, you know, earth shattering, I guess, in a teaching standpoint. It's a lot like the 5 simple keys that Chuck Evans has talked about, but it's just simply a framework to work off of. And there's pluses and minuses, which I think, you know, a big influence of mine was Jim Hardy. You know, when we start talking about steeps and shallows, I mean, it all kind of works together. So you're just trying to put the matching pieces and give that information to the student so they can hit, you know, whatever shot they're trying to hit or whatever ball pattern they're trying to hit. So low point control was sort of what I found was, you know, very, very important. That's number one, where you're controlling the bottom of the arc, whether it's, you know, hitting ball first and hitting ground second with an iron, or controlling the low area with a driver where you're not hitting down too much or hitting level or hitting up, you know, depending on, you know, what you want to do. And the second one, I guess, is more of a preference, but I put in there centered pivot because, again, controlling low point has a lot to do with how your body's moving in certain cases. So when you got somebody that's staying in forward bend too long, turning their shoulders too flat, and then their head moves about 2 feet off the ball, then I think that could definitely be a good place to start if you're trying to get somebody to hit the ball first and hit the ground second.
Yeah.
So again, there's a lot of, I don't, you know, quote me on saying I just teach a centered pivot, because I don't. We have plenty of guys that have what I'd call more, you know, positive pivots, or where the head moves a little bit more to the right. If they can have the other pieces that can represent a good strike, then I'm good with that. But so that's a bit more of a preference.
Okay.
You know, and then we got club face control, which Robbie talked about, and, you know, how we change the club face with, whether it's, you know, your attachment to the club or, you know, your wrist angles, you know, a lot of that stuff is going to influence. But then we go to sweet spot control or club path, as we would say, because I teach with a lot of TrackMan and a lot of technology. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people would recognize what that represents. So, and then the last one is D-plane knowledge, which I want every student that comes through my lesson T to understand the basics of ball flight.
Yeah.
You know, because we've always, you know, talked about how, you know, different things influence what. So I want them to know that, you know, especially when we're dealing with TrackMan or we're dealing with a launch monitor, you want them to be able to play along and understand that the ball starts where the club face is pointing and then the ball curves away from the club path.
Yes.
So just basics of like that, and then understanding angled attack. So I just want them to have that basic knowledge when we start to work, because that way they're more informed with, you know, changes that we're making during the golf swing.
Beautiful. Okay, well, before we go anywhere, and I'm a big one for understanding, because my belief for me, who's now a part-time instructor, full-time broadcaster, used to be the other way around, I'm big about empowering the student to sort of put me out of business as the teacher. Because if I've taught right the first time, I become a sounding board in the end, because you've empowered your receiver. So let's get the jargon out of the way, okay? Because one of the big things for hand path control and sweet spot control is where the center of mass of the golf club is. And people see COM and COP and these acronyms and stuff. And I fear that their eyes start spouting blood. So would you nicely describe to folks what that represents?
Well, the center of mass of the club is just the balance point. So it sort of falls, you know, closer to the club head, I guess.
Yeah, I saw a picture. I saw a picture that you had with a junior group of yours, where you had them balancing the club on their forefinger, I believe it was, finding the center of mass of the club. And for those folks that have seen a swing weight measure, it's kind of the similar sort of deal, and that's where the center of mass of the club is.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, nowadays, you know, with kind of the new stuff that's coming out with the science of what the club is doing, it's more about controlling the relationship of the handle relative to the sweet spot or the center of mass. But I focus on the sweet spot because that's where we're trying to hit the ball.
Of course.
Right? So either way, I think it works. But for me, you know, we know that there's not an exact swing plane, or there's not one swing plane that works for everybody. So I'm more concerned with the relationship of how the handle is working in the downswing relative to the sweet spot of the club.
Well, let's talk about that then, because I find so many golfers, they're all wrapped up in their backswing and they get the thing to the top and then all heck breaks loose. So let's talk about from the top down, how you envision the handle moving effectively, and I know this is generic, and how that affects where the sweet spot is and how that returns to the ball.
Yeah, that's great, because I think this is probably what's going to help the listeners the most. And then some of the things that me and Robbie and Seth, my staff, have really been diving into is, you know, the information is great because we know the club, let's say the sweet spot in every good player in early transition, the sweet spot is going to move back and up, right? So it's going to move basically behind the handle at early transition. Now, how is that going to help us hit the ball better? Well, we know that that gives us some early contribution of club face squareness. That's always good for most players. And we're assuming here that we've got a reasonable backswing and a club face and wrist angles at the top that we like.
Absolutely.
Right? So we're starting down. So,
well, I want to stop you for a second there, just for listeners, and because we're painting pictures here in their mind.
Yeah.
So as the listener is looking at their swing from down the line, okay?
Yeah.
At the top, let's say for argument's sake that the club head is lined up with the hands. So ideally, that sweet spot of the club or the center of mass is going to move a little bit upward, which I know is odd for people to believe, and then behind the hands, which would make the shaft appear that it's kind of laying down a bit more. Am I doing a nice job of describing there?
Absolutely, yeah. It's going to start to shallow or flatten, whatever terminology you want to use. But as we know, with all the science stuff coming out, we know how much influence the golfer has on the handle of the golf club. So I think the hand path is a very good place to reference the best way to hit the ball coming down. So when I'm looking at it from the side view, because most people are talking about the sagittal plane, which is looking at the face on, you know, where the hands kind of go down and exit and then go up, and that's fine. But I'm more curious about the side view. So what I'll do when I'm looking at video, I have TrackMan and video run at the same time, is at the top of the swing. And again, I'll reference that obviously there's different hand positions at the top. But I like to get the hands deep enough to where if you're looking at the side view again, at least the hands, if you draw a line from the hands straight down, it'll hit the player in the back heel of the right foot.
Okay, so that's at the top of the swing.
Does that make sense?
Yes,
At the top of the swing. Yeah, not for everybody, but just a good little reference point. And then I'll draw a line from the grip of the end of the grip down to the golf ball.
Gotcha. Beautiful.
Right? Right. So as soon as I call it just a hand path reference line, again, it's not a plane. It's not, has nothing to do with anything, but I just want to see where the hands are going to go early transition. So I like to see the hands start to move downward before they start to move out.
All right.
Right? So that way, one, we're getting the handle lower, and two, we're getting the handle closer to the body when it starts to get down to about last shaft parallel, which I think is super important, especially when we get to driving. We can talk about that in a minute.
And just to put this into perspective, though, it's not a conscious pulling down of the handle. It's more a free fall, I guess, is the proper term to describe it, because, you know, folks get to tugging on that handle, and then they're going to have a tough time, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple schools of thought there, and I'm glad you brought that up, because we've been messing around with sort of, we know exactly what happens in the transition, right? I mean, we know the pelvis goes first, then the torso, then the shoulders and the arms.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to create a feel for the player, a lot of times you've got to give them something that maybe is not accurate, but it's going to allow them to make that change. So understood. That's where I was talking about the difference between teaching good players and in teaching higher handicappers, I think can be a different method, right? So if I'm teaching good players, or even let's just say a mid to intermediate handicapper that have a little bit of hand drop, but maybe need some assist, I'm going to give them the method of getting them to feel like their hands and arms stay back, their shoulders stay closed, but I'm going to give them the feeling of, you know, pressure shift early and then have their torso start to unwind to the left and sort of run into that lead arm to get the body motion going.
I understand.
But also allow for the hands to drop. Right. So, but when you give that to somebody that's already got, you know, a swing where they're applying force to the back of that grip, you've seen them. I mean, their hands are going out and you know, the shaft's coming in so vertical.
9/10 of them.
It out.
Yeah, 90% of them. Yeah, right.
Right. So that's what that's probably 80% of my day is I'm trying to work with those kind of players. And maybe they don't have the ability to separate their shoulders from their torso. Right. So I think that's the big thing you got to watch out for is if somebody can't separate their stand, like if you're just holding your arms straight out in front of you and you put your hands on the club and they can't take their chest and turn it to the left because they don't have enough shoulder mobility, then you're going to have to actually get them to feel like the shoulders and the chest stay back longer and not so much pull the hands down, but just let them drop. Now I use a lot of resistance training with my guys or with my players to help them get that feeling. So I'm moving them around with my hands. I'm using barabands and, or, you know, just some things. I'm moving them in opposite directions so they can actually do the work. So I'm not really explaining to them what they need to do. They just need to feel it.
You know what? I'm glad you said that, because for the bulk of folks listening to this, and I'm talking to slicers of the golf ball now, folks that chop across the line too much, you know, the first thing they'll hear from the grill room is, well, you got to work from the ground up and your body's got to lead and you've got to pivot for power. All these things are correctly stated, but they're misappropriated. Right. And then these poor folks, they get to the top and they are heaving on the chest and they're spinning like tops. And the club just gets whacked straight across the line, where I'm glad you referenced the fact that for your typical golfer who hits across the line, you got to feel a little more closed with your torso to get that handle going in the correct path in the early portion of the downswing.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, one, you got to get their hands deep enough in the backswing. So that's the first thing. Mm-hmm. And then that way they have a little bit more room for error. But then you've got to, you know, get them to understand that the hands have to work down. You know, the handle's got to get closer to the right leg. I mean, all these things are exaggerated references. But for a guy that's tipped it out, you know, and swung 12 to the left all his life, I mean, you've got to make a dent in that or he's not going to hit the ball better.
Yeah. Beautiful. All right. We'll keep going. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
No. So just going back to the chest and the arms. I mean, as you're unwinding the chest, and then if we talk about driver, let's just say we achieve that sort of pattern where the hands are actually dropping a little bit. So the hand path actually goes down, out, and then curves back to the left.
Yes.
Right. So when you start to have issues, in my opinion, so if we go with what we don't want to do, is when the hands go out too early. So they get across that reference line, and then the club drops behind them. Now we've got a big problem. So when that club flips upside down at impact, the handle is going to be extremely high. You're going to have an open face.
Ooh, toe
or
shots.
Or you're going to have sweet spot control.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so you get toe shots, heel shots, you get shanks. So in my opinion, the shank issue, I'm looking at really that trail arm and the distance between the hands and the body. So if the hands start to go out too early and then basically that right arm starts to straighten, now we're in full radius mode and we're going to wrap the heel around it every time.
Yeah.
Ooh,
yes. No, it does. And no, folks hearing this, they're like, oh no, and they're shouting la, 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 la. Okay. So you've spoken about, you know, ideally the handle drops a bit and then swings out and then hits maximum through contact, then works back to the left into the follow through. As the hand path is doing this, explain to the folks the influence on the club, because to me, and as watching golfers do this, it takes a lot of faith on folks' behalf to trust the fact that in doing this, this club face is going to show up the ball consistently, because they all want to react and sort of toss their hands at the thing at the last ditch second right there.
Absolutely, yeah. I think that's why it's so important that you get a club face that's manageable at the top, whether, you know, you're getting people to, you know, feel like the left wrist is flexing a little earlier, or, you know, just making sure the club face is not super open, because mm-hmm. a lot of that issue comes from them just trying to get the club head on the ball and to not hit it to the right. So they're going to tip it out and they're going to throw their hands out real early, because yeah. that's the only way they can get the club face on the ball. So a lot of times, you know, the hand path is a result of something that's happened at the top of the backswing, where it's an open face, or, you know, hands that are too high at the back, they just haven't gotten enough rotation going back. So, but I think that's why the cool thing that we've learned from TrackMan is the effect of, they call it swing plane, but really what swing plane on TrackMan is measuring is sort of what the sweet spot's doing from about sort of knee height to knee height.
Yeah.
Right. So, and I think, I don't remember who it was. I think it was Liam Mucklow did a nice little study on the lower the handle is through impact for driving, the better the player was. Right.
Mm, so
how do you get
that.
The handle yeah. low? How do you get the handle low at impact? Well, you got to have a hand path that works down first, right? Then out a little bit, and then left. So yeah. the higher that VSP is at impact, the harder it is to drive it straight. And I think that's where I try to get that handle in the ground, per se, stealing a line from Scott Hamilton, get that handle in the ground. That way they can use their pivot effectively, and the club's going to work much better through impact.
Well, you bring up a good point there, and I hear folks are hearing you now, and they're like, oh, goodness, I'm going to hit this thing heavy. So let's say now they've transitioned nicely. You know where I'm going. So they've transitioned yeah. good. That shaft is laid down a bit. The center of mass is in behind them, and they've hit – what is the lowest area in the swing hand path-wise, which is kind of around the trailing thigh. How do you get the
Correct.
Thing up and through the ball and into the follow-through from there? Describe how that transpires.
Yeah, so that's where the pivot can't stall, right? So the body rotation has to continue, because a lot of people will, you know, we've talked a lot about early extension, or what I call it sort of, you know, humping the golf ball where the player gets really tall. And,
as a family show.
Right, yeah. So, but let's assume that if the handle's low, then we've done a nice job of going into forward bend
yeah.
and maybe a little bit of right side bend through impact. So then it's a matter of keeping that left shoulder moving around, keeping the left hip moving around with the torso. So it all sort of starts to line up post-impact. And the hand path, I like to see the hand path working out no higher than the left shoulder, if possible,
mm-hmm. okay.
depending on the shape of the shot, right? So you're going to see your fingers are going to tend to come out a little lower. Your drawers are going to tend to come out a little bit higher on the front side. And then, you know, they just keep everything moving through the shot, because also that's going to help slow the face down, right? So if you have players that tend to come in and flip it and the face rotation is a little bit too aggressive, then, you know, keeping the body pivot moving is going to help slow that down a little bit.
So in other words, folks, in transition, it's not immediate pivot. It's kind of like a little lowering, a sit down, if you will. And then from there, when you're at your lowest with your hands, then you're pivoting and you're working up into your follow through, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll use a lot of visual aids, and I'll take a noodle and I'll just bend it around that person's body, like they almost got a swing floaty on, right? Or a little
okay,
a swim
right.
floaty
mm-hmm.
in front of them. So I'll say, I want the hands dropping, and then I want them moving around their waist, right? Because the adverse effect to dropping your hands a little bit would be for the hands to keep going out to the right.
Yes.
And that's what we don't want as well. So we want to make sure we balance it out with, you know, shallow and then more of a steepening move, which would be the body rotating through and the hands staying kind of low through impact.
Well, the noodle is a great thing, and I'm not so sure the folks could go do that on their own, but do you have perhaps a neat drill or something they can go and do that you could describe that folks could go and work on the range to get the hand path working neat nicely?
Well, you can use a lot. You can use noodles. You can use those dowel rods. I like to stick a dowel rod out to the right of the player. Early transition, just try to give them a reference point. You got to be careful, you know, without a professional there to set it up, because people get hurt.
Yeah.
But just anything to sort of, you know, a lot of times I'll stick a noodle over the golf ball, which is really easy to do. If, you know, if you have a broken shaft and a noodle, you can stick it over the ball.
All right.
In order for that player to get under that noodle, the hands have to drop a little bit, or they'll run into the noodle and hit it.
How high above the ball do you set the noodle, just for reference for folks if we were describing?
A couple of feet. You know, I just basically imagine the standing directly on the target line. I'll just pick the noodle straight up over the golf ball at about a 45-degree angle. That way they have to swing underneath it.
Oh, gotcha.
But again, you know, you got to take it into, you know, you don't want to leave them on there too long, and then they start swinging too far to the right. Mm-hmm. But it's a good initial, you know, great drill for somebody that's continually swinging left too much, which, again, we're dealing with every day.
Yeah, and it kind of reminds me of an exercise I learned way back in the day from a mentor of mine, where there was sort of this overhanging bush, and he made me go and stand and address an imaginary ball that was underneath the bush, and the bush was out in front of me. And then I had to swing back and forth and get the club underneath the bush without driving my hands into the bush. I thought that was a neat way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, obviously intention can play a big part of it. It's just getting people the right concepts of saying, okay, if you're going to hit a draw, you've got to have some intention of swinging the golf club right at the target, mm-hmm. not swinging down the line or swinging at the target like a lot of people have been taught. And that'll change perception and can change the pattern pretty quickly. But just getting them the right idea of what type of swing, what's the club need to do, right? How's the body going to respond to that? And then obviously, you know, putting that into an athletic motion to where it'll make sense. So another drill I just thought of, it doesn't have to do with the golf ball, but perception again, is I'll put a stick out. I call it the goalpost drill. I'll put a stick out on the target line.
Okay.
Let's say we're trying to take somebody from hitting pull slices to a push draw. And I'll put another stick just to the right of that and show them that the perception of the target is, the start direction is so much farther to the
right.
Of the golfer because of that triangulation piece, right? I think it's called parallax, but
yes,
have them look through that gate. I mean, it looks like it's 50 yards right of the target. So they've got even though we know the club path isn't going to make the ball start over there, it gives them a good visual of how far to the right they need to feel like they're swinging to make that change.
Hey, I love that. It's something I use often because, you know, folks have been told to swing towards the target. But as you're setting up over the golf ball, the parallax makes the target appear further left than what it is. And then they swing to what their perceived target is. And in the end, that hand path ends up going too hard to the left.
Absolutely.
Hey, I want to talk a little bit about sort of the force and the speed that's put in the hands too. Describe speed, if you will, from the transition down into impact and through. Where do you see like a real uptick in speed in the handle of the club?
Well, I mean, I think it was Ping did that study with Enzo that said most good players, their peak speed with their hands are going to be right about right thigh. I think you mentioned that earlier.
Uh-huh.
But as far as getting speed, you know, I mean, it's such a, you know, everybody's trying to get more speed. But again, it's getting people to have a general decent sequence in their downswing, I think. I mean, I know we're trying to go pelvis, you know, torso, shoulders, arms, and hands. And I think you can get shoulders and torso backwards a little bit and still get pretty good speed depending on what the hands and arms are doing. So that's why I think I caution a lot of players out there trying to, as you said, they come and they say, well, I'm not turning my hips enough. I'm not turning my body enough, and it causes them to actually tip it out more and swing more to the left.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times we'll hold the shoulders back a little bit, and I want them really pulling the arms down and swinging the hands fast. I mean, I want to see more arms and hand speed if I feel like that's what's keeping them from generating that club head speed.
I've given
Hold on to that thought,
but I wanted to echo what you said there. I've given so many lessons where something to this sort of an effect has been addressed, and folks will say to me, but I feel like I'm just swinging my arms. And then I'm like, okay, swing through and hold your finish, and they have turned further into the follow-through than they ever had trying to turn their body.
Absolutely. I mean, it's feeling real, isn't it? I mean, it's basically all we're trying to do is slow down what's going too fast, which is usually their shoulders are going too early. So we're slowing the shoulders down. And they do a great job because they've always been told to turn, turn, turn. So they've got really good left turns. They just need to do it at the right time. So if you can hold those shoulders back a little longer, get the club starting to flatten, get that center of mass behind the hand path, and then let them feel like they're swinging their arms past their body turn. And then you show them on video, and it's really not the case. They're still leading so with their torso.
Yeah.
Right? So, again, that's the difference between reading how to swing a golf club out of a book and getting somebody that actually knows what they're doing to get you to do it.
And it's what you've done such a good job of describing, the difference between the good player and the not-so-good player. It's something that just, you know, in the interest of time, I want to zip through this because I've kept you for so long. I want to address to where the center of mass of the club is and that little shallowing of the shaft. Obviously, the correct movement of stuff will help that to transpire. But talk to the folks a little bit who perhaps get the wrists a bit too cupped in transition, or that shaft gets a bit too vertical. Do you have them focus on how the wrists and the forearms move a bit in transition too, and how that affects the grip's path?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, and this is me grabbing people and sort of moving them, whether I'm going to move them in the correct manner or I'm going to actually move them the opposite way and have them resist, which I think is probably even a better way. But I'll explain for the analytical students that want to know the why and the how, then I want to make sure that they understand that, yeah, there's going to be some lead forearm rotation, right? So with that supination, and then you're going to have
And the funny thing about that lead arm rotation, it almost feels like it's turning away from the target line. So if you were picturing your thumb, it's turning to point behind you, which I know is a mind blower because the ball's in front of you.
Right, and that's what freaks out the students, is that the average golfer, because they feel the club head behind them more than they've ever felt it. Mm-hmm. So they're confused on how are they going to get the thing back to the ball. So then I'll show them that, you know, we've got body rotation that's bringing the club around, but we need more of this sort of motion with the left forearm rotating, you know, the right elbow going from, you know, internal to external. And then we've got all this that's really lowering the club into where, you know, we would hit, you know, functional shots. Mm-hmm. And then having them rotate the body. But I still want to have them have some feeling in their hands and arms, because without understanding that, I always give them that simple visual of the back of the left hand is the club face, right?
Ah,
so
I like that.
So when they start going into lead wrist flexion coming down, then they understand that that's the club face. So they've got to rotate that. There's got to be some contribution of, you know, some grip roll or some forearm rotation a lot of times to make it square up. Because when you make that little transition move, what's the club face doing? It's one to open, mm-hmm. right? So that freaks people out. So it's one to open. So you've got to have that contribution of wrist, you know, and forearm roll in order to counteract that to get the thing back to square. Because I've had plenty of lessons where I'm given really good shape changes, but then they're hitting pushes and they're going, what the heck? So now it's like, okay, now we got to fix the face, right? So you don't always fix the face first, okay? A lot of times that when that ball is starting to the left, and you know, we know that we've got decent face control, we've got to do something to get the shape better.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times that face will piggyback on that path, right? So mm-hmm. even though it was left at impact when you were tipping it out, when you start swinging more to the right, it might piggyback itself and actually open up. So then you've got to add some forearm rotation and get that lead wrist to start flexing earlier in order to square that face.
Yeah,
does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Savvy stuff, Master. Okay, one more question.
Sure.
The quick email that you sent me, you spoke of line of force direction, which I think is sort of so important, because people think a bit linear when they approach the golf swing, and they don't think of the fact that you're swinging in an orbit tangential to a target line. So speak about that a little bit for me, please.
Well, it's just the direction your hands are moving is basically what I was talking about, the line of force. Mm-hmm. Where, and I think so much of it is the contribution of the trail arm. When we got people that are swinging out the end and swinging across the ball, you know, and you look at sometimes you say, well, man, their body motion looks pretty decent. So what's causing the hands to go out so early? Mm-hmm. And again, it could be that open face, you know, but just hit, you know, the hit, you know, somebody just wanting to hit the ball with the club head, trying to get the club head on the ball too soon. So they're moving, they're basically applying force to the back of the shaft and moving it out towards the ball too soon, which pushes the hand path out. So it's like, there's got to be some kind of force moving downward, whether it's happening because of good body motion, like we talked about with good players, or they have to think about it or feel a little extra line of force moving down towards that right foot or down towards that right leg in order to get that change. Because I'm really big on having my players do things in slow motion, right? So that deep practice theory.
Preach.
Yeah. So I'm just having them doing tons and tons of really, really slow rehearsal swings until they start to feel whatever it is, right? So I'm going to get feedback from the student of, I feel like I'm pulling my hand down. I feel like my right elbow is doing this. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. All right. So you got to go with how they feel. It's not our job to tell them what to feel. Mm-hmm. It's our job to get them to feel something that's going to make the change so they can go play golf.
Yeah. I call it, and I use the term with my students a lot, I'm like, physical awareness, be aware of yourself, you know, because when you ask for feel feedback, as you know, they hit the thing flush and like, well, it felt good. And I'm like, what felt good? And they're like, well, the ball. And I'm like, I want you to feel what you are doing in order to put the club in the area that creates that consistently square strike.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the players have three different awarenesses. One is a body awareness. One is usually a hands and arms awareness, and the other is a club awareness, right? So you got to figure out which works best for that player, right? So a lot of times you can have them do something different with the golf club, and that'll fix their body pivot, or that'll fix their arms. Or then maybe that doesn't work. Some players can't feel where the golf club is. They're focused more on their body pivot, or they're focused on a body part, and that works for them. So it's just, again, it's kind of throwing spaghetti against the wall a lot of times, but that's just part of teaching, right? We're just trying to figure out what works best for that student because everybody's different.
Yeah. One last question. You speak of the handle control and how it affects the shape of the swing and where the force goes. Have you ever read or have you ever met with Eddie Merens? Because of course, he's teaching and he taught
swing the handle.
Yeah, he taught legends with swing the handle. I mean, have you ever read about this stuff?
I did, yeah. Like I was saying, when I was coming up, I read everybody's book. I mean, I've read so many golf books and other books that it's crazy. But, the little pro, right? I mean, I remember talking about swing the handle, and I think that's a fantastic idea, especially for iron swings, you know, feeling like you're swinging the handle. But, I mean, again, it's just a feel. We're just trying to teach players to feel. Now we know exactly what's happening with the golf club. So, you know, a lot of times you can get in trouble for some of the terminology that you use, but I don't even care. I mean, if I get my players to hit the ball better,
it's your job done.
That's what I'm going with.
You've been a gem, man. I appreciate your time, Jason. I know the folks probably want to find out more from you. Social media, website, where do they go to find you?
Yeah, so my website is golfgurutv.net, and you can find me on any social media, Instagram, golfgurutv, Twitter, golfgurutv, and then on Facebook. Just friend me up. But yeah, I spend a lot of time on Instagram and Twitter and then Snapchat, which I do a lot of Snapchat during my day, kind of showing people what I do every day working with my players. It's GolfGuru1, so if you want to follow me on Snapchat.
Look at you Snapchatting, man. You're a man of the man of the millennials.
Got to keep up. The youngin'.
All right, Guru. I appreciate your time, man. Thank you very much.
Hey, my pleasure. Anytime.
This segment of the On The Mark podcast was brought to you by Synovus. Here should be the most important place to your bank, because here is where you are. Synovus, the bank of here. Well, that's Jason Sutton. Lots of information in there for you. Don't forget, it's a podcast so you can rewind and go and re-listen, because as he said, hand path is so important to overall swing path. And of course, little bonus in there, hand path and wrist and forearm rotation and maneuvering helps to present that club face squarely to the path too. And if that club face is appropriately set up to the path, then you are likely to hit functional golf shots. And now it is time to step up your game with Bridgestone Golf. Quick tip for you regarding that hand path, two things. I learned from Nick Faldo way back, and you can listen to Nick Faldo on our podcast. Go search for him, pgatour.com/podcasts or in wherever you go and just type in Nick Faldo on the mark. And he said to me when he was at the height of the game, if he had to do it all over again, he would spend more time in front of a mirror and less time hitting golf balls. And I think that is great advice. So here's the tip for you to help you to identify whether you are making the correct hand path or not. So address a club. If you have a big mirror, tremendous. If not, a window outside of the house, a reflective window or surface would definitely help. But I want you to stand so that your mirror is to your right-hand side, golfers, or to your left-hand side for left-handed golfers. So you are basically, if you were hitting a shot, you're hitting a shot away from the mirror. Then as you set up to an imaginary golf ball, just rotate your chin to the right so that you can see yourself in the mirror, which is to your right or to your left, depending on whether you're right or left-handed. Swing back to the top. You'll be able to see your body's pivot. You can feel the weight shift. You can see where the handle of the club is. You can see a bonus measure where the golf club is lined up. And then from there, as you keep your eyes trained on yourself, don't look where the ground is. Don't look back to the imaginary golf ball. Keep your eyes looking at yourself. Feel the lower half transition the downswing and start to watch how that handle comes down and how the club head shallows, how the club head follows and come all the way down to where the handle is sort of around your trailing thigh and the club head is in a similar area. Do that a few times and you will get a feel for, and you'll get the visual too, so you can tie in the visuals and the feel as to whether your club is transitioning and the hand path is appropriate. And then just to sort of see and feel how it should go through contact, grab a big-headed club like a driver, a fairway metal, or a hybrid, and just make little half swings, sort of from 9 to 3 if you want a clock face. But go back and forth without stopping. Feel some leg action, feel some body pivot, and swing that club without stopping. And it'll blur after a while, and you should start to see what looks like a little half moon, a little semicircle that sort of interacts. It comes from the inside of the target line, matches up with the target line, then goes back to the inside of the target line. That will give you a visual and a sense for how you need to pivot and how the handle moves through contact to get this golf club to move online. So try in front of a mirror and then try that back and forth swinging deal. If you're unsure as to what that looks like, just watch Jordan Spieth before any golf shot. You'll see him swinging back and forth and back and forth. It's a great way to improve your game really easily. But if you want a more simple way to improve your game, switch to Bridgestone golf balls. Millions of real golfer ball fittings prove the Bridgestone Tour B series and the E6 series golf balls are longer and more accurate than the Titleist Pro V1. Just go try it. One round will prove it to you. Well, that's your On the Mark podcast. Once again, full of information that is supposed to help you to better understanding. And supposed to help you then to empower you so that you can do the right thing. But suffice to say, swing shape, club face and path management, hand path, that is very much a part of good swing path and good club face management. So address that area, whether you're a great golfer or whether you're just a beginner. It feels awkward at times because, you know, you've got this extension to the end of you, the club head. But if you can get your hands moving along an efficient path, the club head will trail as your body pivots and shifts the pressure correctly. I am Mark Edelman. Thanks for downloading this one. Tell your friends about it. Get out, play golf, have lots of fun, make lots of birdies. Take it easy.
This broadcast and all associated rights, including copyright, are owned exclusively by the PGA Tour and may not be used in whole or in part without the prior written permission of the PGA Tour.
Synovus is the bank of here. Here is a fairway that took shape before engines replaced horses. Here's where some days you lay up and others you just go for it. Here's where you don't even need a tee time. And here is where a casual conversation on the back nine turns into a successful business expansion. Here should be the most important place to your bank, because here is where you are. Synovus, the bank of here. Banking products provided by divisions of Synovus Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.